This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
Hi, folks. Bob Main here with another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Well, as you know, this is a practical show done by an everyday practical guy like me. And, you know, folks, I do a little firearms training on the side, but, you know, my background does not come from law enforcement or military or being a gunsmith. It just comes from being an everyday guy, a salesperson. And, you know, I was raised up in Yankee land, but now I live in the great gun-friendly state of Texas in the San Antonio area. So this show, episode 228, I am going to get after some voicemails. I've got quite a bit of a backlog here on voicemails. So I'm going to get to everything that has come in over the past couple weeks. I'm doing a little better. My mind is still not anywhere close to being 100%. I'm doing a little better. The shock of everything is beginning to wear off. I promise I'll put out details when the time is right, but we have some internal family things to deal with. But, you know, a tragedy has hit our family, and it's tough to deal with, but I'm working through it, and I'm going to work through it. And this podcast is going to be an escape for me, folks, so I want you to know that. This is going to be an escape in my firearms training. I'm going to have to back off on some of the training, obviously, because I need to be with my family, which is the most important thing. And so that's going to back off a little bit, but I'm not going to quit. I'm going to continue to do training. I'm going to continue to be an instructor. I'm going to continue to do this podcast. I'm going to continue to be active on the forum. I might not be very active on Facebook much anymore because some of the people on Facebook are really starting to serve no useful purpose. And no offense to those of you who follow me on Facebook, but there's a few of you that don't have a useful purpose anymore. I'm not going to unfriend you, but I'll just kind of leave it at that. I think you guys know who you are. Keep friending me on Facebook, folks. I'll follow it. I'm mainly going to be using Facebook and Twitter just for announcements about the show. Just announcements about the show, about the podcast, about my training, about what's going on, you know, things like that, specials and so forth. Okay? All right. Episode 228 is going to be on voicemails. Now, I want to start by talking about how to get a hold of me by voicemail. You can dial 210-646-1727, 210-646-1727, or you can go to handgunworld.com, and all you have to do is click the Call Me button. Some people say it's working just fine, and some it doesn't. What it does is you click that, and it calls you back on your phone. And then as soon as you answer your phone, you'll hear my voicemail. So try that. If you happen to be using an iPhone or whatever, or you're driving, be real careful, but go to handgunworld.com, click the Call Me button, then you don't have to try to dial a phone number. Otherwise, 210-646-1727, and I'd like to put you on the show. I'm still waiting for the anti-gun person. Still waiting for that anti-gun person to either call my voicemail or come on and interview with me and state your case. So far, nobody seems to have the guts to do that. Kind of makes you wonder if their anti-gun rhetoric, if they're really serious about it, or if they just want to listen to themselves talk, or if they have some type of an agenda. Okay, first voicemail I want to cover. Adam from San Antonio.
Hey, Bob, how's it going? This is Adam, your local San Antonio friend and a graduate of Beyond Carry Concealed course. It's been a while since I've spoken to you or since I've called, but I assure you I'm still downloading your podcast and listening to them. So in reference to some of the things you've talked about or that I've listened to in regard to ammo shortage and Walmart and having different calibers, and you're safe. I kind of wanted to share with you a personal experience. I went to Walmart. There's a Walmart close to my job, so sometimes I'll go and try to get there a little early to the Walmart. And so a couple weeks ago I was there, and there's three other guys in front of me who were also waiting for them to bring out the ammo. And when they did, the lady brought out a few boxes, and there was a lot of, some rifle ammunition, I think 30-30 and 7mm. And then, you know, these guys were waiting for pistol ammo, as was I. And all they had was 40. So all three of them turned to walk away. I think two of them were looking for 9mm, and another guy was looking for 22. And so anyhow, I went and purchased a box of 40. So it just goes to show, from my experience at least, that, the ammo does come in to Walmart, so you just need to be patient, wait for it. And it pays to have different caliber weapons because, you know, you don't have to, you know, give your hopes up, and you can count on their mean. You may have other choices. In other words, you know, like I said, the other three guys turned to walk away empty-handed. I left with some ammo. So anyways, just wanted to share that with you. A couple other things I wanted to mention or ask you about was, are you planning on going to, I think you are, the 142nd NRA annual meeting in less than a month up in Houston? If you are, would you send me a message on Facebook, I guess? Let me know where you're staying at or any hotel that you recommend. I'm planning on going myself with a friend of mine. And then lastly, I wanted to ask you or talk to you about something called auto forward, I believe is what it's called. Auto forward. And that's when my brother, who just purchased not too long ago Smith & Wesson M&P 40, when he slams the magazine into the well, the slide will automatically slide forward. All he has to do is slam it in, and it goes forward. And it actually says that in the instruction manual. It gives a warning that that can happen with that weapon. So I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, if you've ever heard of that. It was certainly new to me when we were... Hey, Bob, Adam again. Ran out of time. So let me finish this up. In reference to the what I was speaking of about the auto forward, is that when my brother and I were at the range, I noticed that he noticed it at first, and then I was kind of intrigued by it. And so, if that's something that you're familiar with, or that you've talked, or that you've heard of before, or experienced, then I'd certainly like to hear about that, and how what you think about it, or how beneficial you think it might be. I think it would be beneficial, like in competitions, for example, where you know you're needing to just do a quick reload, and you just, you know, instead of having to reach up and rack the slide, you just pop in your magazine, you're ready to go. However, I've also heard of it being a detractor, or in instances where some guys are used to, you know, racking the slide every time, or they're used to, you know, pressing the slide release, that would kind of throw off their game. I think in the case for my brother, where he's a new shooter and this is his first gun, then that's all he's going to know to this point. He hasn't been trained any other way. So for maybe a new shooter, that type of action would come in handy. So anyhow, just thought I'd share that with you. Thanks for taking my call, and I'll look forward to hearing from you soon. Bye.
Well, good hearing from you again, Adam. I'll take these one at a time. The 40 caliber find, good job on the 40 caliber ammo. Yeah, you know, you folks that are calling in might be convincing me that it definitely is something that I should do, is get a 40 caliber gun that can easily be converted to 357 SIG, and then that way have all kinds of calibers to shoot. So, I'll think about that. Adam, I'm not going to the NRA meeting. Once again, folks, I am not going to the NRA meeting. I decided about 3 or 4 weeks ago I wasn't going to go, and now I think with my family situation, maybe God was telling me something, you know? So definitely, no, I need to be home with my family. That's far more important. And as far as the auto forward, I have heard of that. That's pretty cool. Glocks do that from time to time. It seems like I have some Glocks that will do that and some that won't. Some Glocks, no matter how hard I slam the magazine in, it won't go forward. And then sometimes, one of my Glock 19s, it does it every single time. As long as I hit it, as long as I slam the magazine in there with enough force. It's pretty cool. Could save you some time. I don't know if it'll screw you up that much in a fight. I can tell you that in competition, it might throw you off by a second or two, but it could also give you an advantage. So pretty cool feature. Yeah, I like it when guns do that, and that's pretty cool. So, Adam, thanks for calling that in. It's good to hear from you again. Okay, let's go to Dave in Utah.
Hi, Bob. This is Dave in Utah. I'm a little bit behind on your podcast. I just heard the call from, I believe it was Luke in Minnesota, talking about problems with carrying a gun at work in a restrictive environment, things like that. Some other options you might consider are different types of weapons that are a little more, not a gun. Like a, pepper spray is always a good standby. From what I've heard from police officers that I've talked to, Fox Labs makes a really angry, hot, unpleasant pepper spray. You might look into that. You might also consider an impact weapon, like maybe a collapsing police baton. Those are basically, when you flick them out, it's basically you have a steel pipe. You can't argue that that's an ineffective weapon. I would stick with a brand name like Asp or Monadnoc, because you wouldn't want it to, go to the cheap Chinese import store and get a cheap one that's going to fall apart when you need it to not fall apart. And there's also, you might consider different types of knives. A standard K-bar fighting knife has been, used by the U.S. Marine Corps for the better part of a century, so it's hard to argue with that, but they're a foot long. K-Bar also makes a knife called the TDI, that I think it stands for Tactical Defense Institute or something like that. It's a little bit smaller. The grip is angled, so it's kind of more like a pistol grip. Just go ahead and look that up to see it. You also might consider a knife called the Hide Away Knife. That's H-I-D-E, Away Knife. Instead of the handle, there's actually a custom-sized metal loop that your index finger and middle finger go through. Gives you a good knife in a very small package, very easy to conceal on your person anywhere. So I would look up those types of weapons and look up some training for it if a gun is really not an option at all. This may have been answered already, but I thought I'd just add my two cents. All right, keep up the show. Have a good day, Bob. Bye.
Thanks, Dave. Excellent voicemail. Very good suggestions. Dave reminds us all that it's not always about the gun. Defending yourself can happen in many different ways. If you are in an NPE, a non-permissible environment, then you do need to look in other directions. And what Dave has talked about, a lot of these different types of devices can be excellent defensive weapons. I can make a good defensive weapon out of a flashlight. It's amazing what you can do with a flashlight with enough lumens to partially or temporarily blind somebody. And also, if it's got the crenulated bezel, you can do some pretty damage with that as a striking weapon as well. So, yeah, if you just simply can't have a gun at work, then look at all the different devices that Dave talked about and consider taking some self-defense classes. Get some self-defense classes. Learn how to... Learn hand-to-hand combat, Krav Maga, MMA, boxing, kickboxing, whatever. Get into that kind of stuff as well. Learn how to, use improvised weapons and how to make weapons, how to improvise weapons out of different objects and things like that. So plenty of good classes on that that you can also do. So Luke, you're probably still listening, and Dave brought up some good stuff to consider. Thanks, Dave. Okay, let's go to Doug in Nevada.
Hey, Bob. My name's Doug, and I'm responding to your podcast 225 regarding ammunition and how much we lay back. And what I kind of take it in two ways. When I see there's nothing on the store shelves, nothing to be bought up, I get bummed out a bit, although I don't need the ammunition. I still like to buy it. But it also makes me feel good because I know that everybody's out there buying it. That means Americans are out there responding to the threat to our rights. Now, if they were talking about banning guns and making it difficult, so I'm concerned. So it kind of does warm my heart a bit that there's a lot of people that are taking notice and being interested. So on that line, I don't really mind. But there's also something that I did prior to all this. Now, I grew up in California. I've been down this rodeo a couple times with the gun bans and ammunition and all that kind of stuff. So what I've always done is every time I go to the big box store prior to Sandy Hook, I'd go buy two boxes of whatever caliber I figured that I wanted. And that worked out great for me. Now our local Walmart, you can't find the ammo unless you get there at the right time, like you were saying, you know, camping out or timing it great. They limited you to two boxes. Well, typically that's what I would buy anyway, so the limiting on boxes really doesn't bother me. But what I've done is my wife's got a 9mm, I've got a 9mm. Both of us carry, that's our primary carry gun, that's the one we're going to train with the most. I've got all the other military-style calibers you can imagine, from .308, .762, 5.56, 5.45, and all that stuff. And what I did was I made sure I laid it back. You know, when I found a good deal prior to Sandy Hook, I bought it because I knew this is a commodity. It's something that's going to have value, and it's never going to be less of value than it is at the time I bought it. So it's like taking my money, but instead of putting it in the bank doing nothing, I put it into ammunition. And I know some people are going to say, well, that sounds crazy, but I'm sure the gun people aren't. But any other person that might hear that might have said, you know, well, that sounds crazy. But you know what? Here I am now. I think I'm sitting back on 15,000 rounds of .22 and a couple thousand rounds of 9mm and 3,500 rounds of 5.56. And it goes on and on and on because I made sure I bought more than I shot. And I made sure that I bought it cheap and stacked it deep when the time was good. And what happens is, to me, when I hear these people say, well, I don't have any ammunition and I need to go buy some, and now I got to pay premium prices, I think of the people at Hurricane Sandy standing there outside of the gas station with a little one-gallon can, and they're 100 deep, all standing there. They all, hey, Bob, this is Doug, and I want to finish my point. As far as watching TV and seeing these people at Hurricane Sandy when they could have got tons of gas, now they're there paying premium prices with getting 1 gallon at a time because they didn't have the foresight to get it while the getting was good. There was a time when you could buy all the ammunition that you wanted, and what happens now is that nobody can find it. And unfortunately, you're going to pay a premium for your lack of vision. And it's terrible, and I'm not saying that's a great thing, but, you know, come on, guys. I mean, I put magazines away. I put all these kind of things away, and you know what? Everything I bought went up in value. Not that I want to sell it, but if I had to, I could. Boxes of 1,000 rounds of 5.56 that I paid $294 delivered to my house, no tax, it's now worth $1,000. So, I mean, it's an amazing thing, Bob, and I enjoy your podcast, and it's a great topic. And thank you. Bye.
Doug, what a great voicemail, and what an excellent topic that you bring up. Stocking up a little at a time. And, he makes such great points in here. I've done the same thing with ammo. I've also done the same thing with magazines. Every once in a while, when I could afford a magazine, I'd buy one. You know, I would buy it while I was picking up ammunition, or even if I just happened to be going to an Academy Sports and Outdoors store like we have here in Texas. And even if I was going in for something else, going in to buy a pair of sneakers, or if I'm going in there to, you know, buy a shirt or whatever, I'd just take a waltz on over to the gun section and, you know, oh, hey, look at this. They got Glock 19 mags on sale for $19. I think I'll pick one up just a little at a time. And now I'm sitting on probably 22 or 23 Glock 19 magazines and almost 15, I think 14 or 15 Glock 17 magazines and a bunch of Wilson Combat magazines for my 1911 and stuff like that. So, yeah, see, folks, it's all a matter of a little at a time and planning, having the foresight. Doug mentioned foresight a couple of times here. Now, going forward, This is why I said in my ammo podcast, I think it's important that, yes, you do buy some ammo right now, even at premium prices, buy what you can afford. Because, once again, we don't know what the future is going to hold for us. We have no clue what's going to happen. Things could level off. It could take a year to level off. They could level off for another year or two, and then all of a sudden some kind of an event happens again, and all of a sudden the gun control starts being kicked around again, and up and down and up and down and up and down. If you're serious about this, you're going to stock things like ammo, magazines, and you're going to get training. And folks, you know, so many people have been making the big mistake of stocking up on only guns. You know, new guns. They didn't put their money into ammo and training and magazines. And, you know, some people have gone so far as to criticize people like me and many others that say, buy ammo and get training. Right? They were critical of us. Now, they're jealous of us because we have a bunch of ammo, we have a bunch of magazines, and we're going out there and taking training. So, funny how those things kind of come full circle, don't they? Doug, great voicemail. Thanks for calling it in. Let's go to Jan from Connecticut.
Hey, Bob. This is Jan in the newly gun-unfriendly state of Connecticut. I just got done listening to your Ammo Talk podcast, and it was really great. It was a good podcast, as they always are. I had a few, if I could add to it a bit, you know, I had a few small tips that might help people if they're looking for ammo and can't find what they're looking for. If you're looking, say, for .45, and you can only find like a 9 or .357 or whatnot, grab a few boxes of it. You can always trade it to somebody. You know, a lot in the current state, nobody's really trying to sell ammo that they bought for a high price right now. You know, if say somebody's got 1,000 rounds of .45, they're not going to want to part with any of it because they don't know if they could find any more. You know, so money's really not going to be useful to you. But, you know, ammo could be. If somebody has 1,000 rounds of .45 and you bought a couple boxes of 9 because that's all you could find, they might be willing to part with them if, you know, they're running low on, say, 9 or 40 or whatever you have to trade them. Just like Jeff Cooper would say, it's a form of ballistic wampum, the precious metal all on its own, you know. So instead of walking around with a pocket full of cash, just buy a common caliber if you can find it, because you know there's always going to be somebody else who's looking for it. And find somebody at the range or a friend who's got ammo, you might be able to trade for what you really need. And I don't know, same goes for reloading components. Say you're not a reloader, but you know of people who do. If you are out and about and you see some primers on sale, or just see some primers in general, grab them. Because that person might be more willing to trade up some of their ammo for your primers. That's a hard thing to find right now. I know I have a bunch of ammo, but I'm not willing to get rid of any unless somebody can supply me with some primers. Just an idea, just a few thoughts I had. Take it easy, Bob. I'll talk to you soon. Thanks, buddy. Bye.
Jan, you're a man after my own heart. I've been advocating that for a long time. Sometimes it's not a bad idea to buy just a couple boxes of ammo for calibers that you don't own, but maybe they're popular calibers. It's a great bartering tool, and you know, I've received pushback on that too. Of course, I don't ever expect everybody to agree with everything I say. Everybody's situation seems to be different, but bartering and trading of ammo is not just something that you do when times are bad, but you can do it now. You know, when things are short, in short supply, and maybe you have one caliber somebody needs and somebody else has another caliber. So I've got some 40 caliber ammo right now, not willing to trade it yet because I might pick up a 40 caliber gun, but I got 40 caliber ammo and I don't own a 40 caliber gun. I also have .357 Magnum ammo, and I don't own a .357 Magnum gun right now. Not a lot, but it's not a bad idea. And I think it's something that you might want to look into. Jan, thanks again for calling that in. Let's go to John from Kentucky.
Hello, Bob. This is John calling from Kentucky. And I was just listening to your show on ammo, and you were talking about having an ammo stash. And I've been keeping a stash. I like to keep about 2,000 rounds of the stuff that I use regularly, and kind of got clued into that when there was an ammo shortage after the 2008 election, and I wanted to go shooting and couldn't find anything. So when things got back in stock again and easy to get, then I started stocking up a little bit and moved more towards buying the least expensive stuff I could use for practice, whether it's reloads or the cheap Russian stuff. Happy to shoot the cheap stuff. I clean my guns regularly anyway, so I don't really worry too much about whatever people call dirty ammo. And then, as you've talked about in some of your other shows, I've really been shooting a lot more 22 long rifle lately. I just bought a dedicated 22 long rifle upper for an AR, and I use a Ruger 22-45. I've been enjoying shooting that as well, just a lot less expensive. And even though 22 is hard to get now, for such a long time it was so inexpensive, and I was able to put back a nice little stash of that. So anyway, I'm still using the stuff that I got a couple years ago and haven't bought anything new lately. So anyway, appreciate your show. Thanks for good work. Take care. Bye.
Well, nice stash you've built there, John. See, there's another example of somebody that lived through the ammo shortage back in 2008, early 2009, learned his lesson, stocked up, and now he's doing pretty well. I kind of have my own personal barometer, so to speak, and mine is this. The most popular caliber that I shoot, I keep minimum 2,000 rounds on hand at all time, and that's 9mm. The second most popular caliber that I shoot, which is .45 ACP, I keep minimum 500 rounds. With rifles, same thing. 2,000 rounds, 500 rounds. 2,000 for my most popular, 500 for my second most popular. I try not to keep more than two popular calibers. And that's kind of why I'm resisting buying a 40 caliber gun, because if I go and drop the $600 or $700 on a 40 caliber Glock or Smith & Wesson M&P, that's a lot of ammo. Even still at today's prices, that's a significant amount of ammo I could buy for either my 9mm or 45. So, you see, I mean, to go drop money on an extra gun so I can buy a few boxes of that ammo sort of defeats my purpose of stocking mass amounts of one or two calibers. It's your choice, and I'm not going to tell you which way to go, because I don't make decisions for other people. I make decisions for myself, and I tell you about them and then let you decide what you want to do. But John, thanks again for calling that voicemail in. Pretty interesting stuff. Okay, be right back. Stay tuned.
The forums are a great place to interact with the podcasters and other listeners to your favorite podcast. Visit GunRightsRadio.com and click on the forums button at the top of the page and sign up for your free membership. GunRightsRadio.com.
Okay, I'd like to take a quick break from the voicemails and tell you that Ben and I just uploaded a new video on the Shooters Club podcast, the Shooters Club membership site. Really cool. It's footage from one of the classes that we recently taught up in the Dallas area. So I really think you're going to like it. Go to handgunworld.com, click the Shooters Club page. Been a lot of people signing up for it. It's a one-year membership full of videos and audios, interviews with really cool people. Just go to the page and check it out. You can see the lineup. Also, May 11th, Ben is teaching an AR rifle course called Defensive AR. It's a basic class. I mean, everything from zeroing your rifle and basic, you know, manipulations and things like that. I'm going to be a student, folks. Check that out. go to AR Rifle Class at handgunworld.com. These are all pages that I'm talking about. Don't forget about my Amazon store. If you want to support my show, you can do so by buying something on Amazon. If you don't want to get the Shooters Club or whatever, next time you make an Amazon purchase, go over to handgunworld.com, click the Amazon store page. There's a link there. You can bookmark that link. Just click the Amazon logo and do your shopping. Don't forget about Glenn Tate's book number 5 in the 299 Days series called The Visitors. Guess what? I'm quoted on the front cover. Hey, I've never been quoted on a book before. That's kind of cool. Glenn Tate, thank you very much. I think I'm going to have him on the show again pretty soon to talk about some interesting stuff regarding the Boston bombing. So that's pretty cool. May 18th and 19th, close-range gunfighting, Suarez International's signature course. I am going to carry through and teach that class because I've made a commitment and I'm going to do that. And then in June, Ben and I are teaching level 2 of our concealed carry class, one up in Dallas, one in San Antonio. And folks have been traveling even from lots of other cities to come to the classes. So to all your graduates of Beyond Concealed Carry, come to level 2. I think you're going to like it. Each of these classes are different in their own right. There's no repetition in any of what we're doing, including the classes that I teach for Suarez International. There's not any overlapping or repetition or anything like that, okay? That's pretty much all I wanted to cover. Oh, no, it's not. How can I forget talking about the product reviews? You know what? I'll tell you what. I got a couple of product reviews for you. But let me go ahead and just throw in a quick little advertisement here, I think, for the forum. And then I'll be right back to talk about a couple of product interviews and get back to the voicemails.
Gun Rights Radio Network has the best pro-Second Amendment, pro-gun rights podcast available on the net. The podcasts are absolutely free when subscribing using iTunes or Zune Marketplace. Or if you want, you could just listen from the website. Make sure you visit gunrightsradio.com to subscribe. Podcasting freedom, one episode at a time.
Okay, the first product review, Sturdy Belt. David Scaife's Sturdy Belt Company. Wow, he just sent me a holster. He just sent me a hybrid holster with some excellent sheepskin on the inside of it to press up against my body and keep it nice and comfortable. I really like the guy's dress belts, man. I'm telling you what, good stuff, and I'm going to give his holster a ride. David has donated a holster to the Shooters Club. So on June 1st, when I do the drawing, you might get a chance to win a holster of your choice, a belt of your choice, excuse me, a belt from Sturdy Belt. Speaking of holsters, my favorite holster so far, Concealment Solutions, the Black Mambas, the Micro Mambas, even the appendix carry rig. I can't remember the name right off the top of my head, but go to concealmentsolutions.com. Thank you, Jason Christensen. Simply the best concealment so far, the best inside the waistband, quick draw concealment holsters that I have ever put on. Concealment Solutions, Jason Christensen's company. He is also donating a holster. So I'm going to give away a belt from Sturdy Belt and a holster from Concealment Solutions on June 1st, part of the drawing. I'm also giving away 250 rounds of ammo, folks. 250 rounds of 9mm ammunition. It's got to be 9mm. That's what I've got stocked up on. 250 rounds of 9mm. That's worth a lot of money, folks. Someone's going to win that on June 1st through the Shooters Club. Also, for the rest of the year, we're also going to give away a free ticket to any of the Beyond Concealed Carry classes that Ben and I are teaching. Members of the Shooters Club will also be in the drawing for that. And everybody who's a member right now will be in the drawing. So 5 or 6 giveaways, training classes, ammunition, holsters, belts, all that good stuff. I promise I deliver more benefit than what you pay for. All right, let's see here. We're going to get back to the voicemails. What's the next one that's on my list? Mexican Joe. That's right. You know, Mexican Joe is a real big supporter of today's survival show, my prepping show, and he's very active on that, on all the efforts that I do over there. But he's also got something to say about 380 pistols. Here you go.
Hey, Bob, Mexican Joe, Northeast Texas, or now they're changing my name to Prolific Mexican Joe. I'm calling about episode 225 where we got into the discussion about the 380. Yeah, you really opened my eyes up, and you're right about the new ammo for the 380. I am no longer a hater of the 380. I probably won't be buying a 380 for logistical reasons. I've got 9mm, 45s, couple ARs, that kind of stuff. I don't want to buy any more. I don't want to have to add another caliber to what I've already got for my inventory, because then that just means that I get to buy less of each caliber where I like to have it focused. So, but you have opened my eyes to the 380, and I am no longer a hater of the 380 as I was before. I've seen what you're talking about. On a second note, we're talking about ammo availability. Being a prepper, it's part of being a group and a network. I'm running around doing my calls, and I'm popping into different places where I've heard there's ammo, and I'm finding ammo. And, of course, there is a 1 and 2 box limit on it, but as soon as I find it, I send out a voice or an email or a text to everybody in my network to say, hey, here's where the ammo is. So it's not just about yourself. You've also got to take care of your friends and your team. So having a network like that is really kind of nice. To let everybody know what's going on, and hey, if I caliber I don't have, but you do, I can pick you up a box and you can pay me for when I get there. So anyway, that's just a couple of notes on that podcast. It was a good podcast. Keep them up. Appreciate it, and take care of yourself. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Joe. Seems like a lot of people liked my ammo talk podcast. I have some other ideas, so I might do a part two on that. As far as 380s, you know, a Mexican Joe, I'm glad that you have changed your mind about the 380s. I was never against 380s, and my pocket 380 gets used a lot. I look at it this way. You know, folks, let's not forget, it is a 9mm bullet. It is a 9mm diameter bullet. A lot of people think of the old days, back when 380 ammo was not very good. Now we have really good 380 ammo. It's not an ideal caliber. It is still what I consider the minimum defensive caliber, the bare minimum. I would prefer that you carry a 940, 45, 357, something like that. And with all the little tiny 9mm guns now, there are some that might be better choices. But as I've said numerous times, the kind of work I do being a salesperson, sometimes I'm in corporate environments, and sometimes I cannot dress around my gun. So I slide the 380 in my pocket in a nice pocket holster, and no one's the wiser. And it works out great, and it's better than not being armed. Okay, Mexican Joe has something else he wants to say.
Hey, Bob, Mexican Joe, Northeast Texas. Hey, two things on, one thing on Ben's episode 227, where we talked about pistol carbine. I believe it was AMT made a 30 caliber carbine pistol, and it was really big, I want to say in the 80s and 90s, and it was big for people who had M1 carbine because they shared the same ammo. I actually ran across a guy who had one. And I shot it as a pistol, and I personally had an M1 carbine at the time. And talk about a phenomenal, phenomenal pistol. Like Bennett said, that it was a 9mm on steroids, because it was twice as long. It was really pumping that lead out there. So it's a really nice pistol if you're going to use a common caliber. And I want to say it was AMP made it, but it was a good gun. On the second note, I want you to keep your chin up. You can't really appreciate the good times unless you have some of the downtime. It just makes the good times that much better. So keep your chin up, buddy. All our prayers are with you. Me and Super Dave talked about it. You know, we just want to make sure that you know we're there for you. All right? Again, keep your chin up, and we'll talk to you again here soon. Thank you. Bye.
Well, good education there, Joe. I didn't know about that pistol that you were talking about there. So thanks for sharing that info, and thanks for the encouragement. I want to thank all of you for the encouraging emails and Facebook messages. You know, one never really knows how much of an impact that you have when you do a podcast like this. Now I'm realizing, because so many of you are sending me emails saying, hey, Bob, you know, you've helped us for so long. At least we could do is help you. I can't tell you how much it means to me to get those emails from you. I'm going to be going through a very, very difficult time here. Very, very difficult time. And again, I promise I'll give you details. Some of you are probably wondering, what's going on? Some of you who are my close friends, you know I've already told you the specifics. But I'll release it to the public once we get a couple of things taken care of. And, oh, man, it just pains me to... Okay, I got... Sorry about this. Hold on a second. Okay. Anyway, Joe, thanks for the words of encouragement to all of you. Thank you for the words of encouragement, and I think I need to get off this subject right now. So let's go to Nelson from San Antonio.
Hey, Bob. This is Nelson from San Antonio. How you doing today? Hope you're doing well. Figured I'd call you and ask your opinion. You've been doing a couple of comments lately regarding the modifications of a handgun and everything and whatnot. And I completely agree with you 100%. I really wouldn't modify a carry gun at all, you know, unless it's the sights or something like that. But trigger-wise, you know, I agree with you in the legalities of it in case you have to use that weapon for self-defense. But I'm sitting here at home right now, and I was cleaning one of my pistols. It's a small little Ruger LCP. Love that little pistol. Sights could be a lot better, I agree. But anyway, point being is, taking it apart, everything's going well, and I noticed that my guide rod, it's a steel guide rod, but the guide rod head is getting a little worn, and one of the springs is actually kind of going over the guide rod head, and, you know, not a big deal. It's easy to take off and everything, but I wonder if that would be reliable or not, and I just did quick searching on the internet, and, seem to have replacement guide rod heads made of a little bit heavier steel and larger heads in general and whatnot. But what are your thoughts on replacing a guide rod as far as would that be usable in court? Would that be something that you might want to stay away from? I mean, I don't see how that could affect, but I just wanted to get your opinion on it. Or you know, I know if Mass has a made any comments about that to you individually, but anyway, just getting your thoughts on that, and just in case you want to check it out, I'm looking at btguiderods.com, B as in boy, T as in Tom, guiderods.com, just so you can see what I'm kind of talking about. I'm not affiliated with them by any way, just quick search on the internet for me. Anyway, I'd love to get your feedback, if possible. Keep doing a great job with the show, and I look forward to training again with you soon. I trained with you in December in the unconcealed carry here in San Antonio. Look forward to part two, hopefully sometime soon. And anyways, have a good one, Bob. Take care. Bye.
Nelson, not a problem. Go for it. Change out guide rods. Sounds like you got a bad one there. Get rid of it. Put a new one in. No, there shouldn't be any reason why you couldn't change out a guide rod on a concealed carry handgun. You know, if I remember correctly, when I went to Mag 40, Masada Yu was talking a lot about staying away from lightning triggers. As a matter of fact, the Pro Arms team did that terrific podcast a couple years ago on light triggers. You need to listen to that. You need to go to the Pro Arms podcast, and you need to listen to their episode on light triggers. They are the expert on it, especially Masada Yub. Listen to that. well, I tell you what, I think that's good stuff. But guide rod, nah, go for it. Go ahead and do that. And Nelson, thank you. Nelson, it was good training with you. I hope to see you again. All right. Rich from California has something to say.
Hey, Bob. Rich here in California. Calling, I just got done listening to your episode 225. You were mentioning one of the callers called in, and you mentioned that critical defense in 380 was pretty good. Want to find out what your thoughts were, critical defense in 9mm. I currently use that in my pistol, And I find that it shoots pretty well. It's very similar to shooting 115 grain full metal jacket. I like the fact that it's similar to the practice ammo out there. I go to something hotter, 124 plus P. I just don't shoot it as well. I'm still learning. I wanted to find out what your thoughts are on critical defense for 9mm and any other 115 grain 9mm self-defense loads. Thanks. Bye.
Rich, Hornady critical defense is good stuff, but I really like the critical duty better. Have you checked out the critical duty in 9mm, 135 grain Hornady critical duty? The recoil is a lot less than I thought it was going to be. I've run about 40 rounds of that through my Glock 19 and my Smith & Wesson M&P Shield. I really like the way the critical duty shoots. It's accurate. The recoil is not that bad. And the ballistics, get on YouTube. There's a guy that's really tested that stuff out. And he's done some pretty good ballistics test on it. And it used to be, of course, till the crisis hit, used to be found everywhere. I mean, it seems like everybody had Hornady critical duty 135 grain. You asked about 115 grain loads. I just took delivery of some more double tap ammo. Yeah, I really, you know, it's I love double tap ammo. They have an imitation of the Corban DPX. Both of those are good. I am a big supporter of Corban DPX 115 grain solid copper Barnes X bullet with a big, deep, hollow point cavity. I like the solid copper bullet for various reasons. Good weight retention. And especially if you need to shoot through a barrier, you got a better chance with the solid copper bullet. Also, Double Tap makes kind of an imitation, and I think they hot loaded a little bit more. They also have a nice 90 grain, I think it is. If you have a small 9mm, you might want to check out the 90 or 95 grain Double Tap rounds. Just go to doubletapammo.com or Underwood Ammo. Underwood Ammo or Double Tap Ammo. Good stuff out there. So, Rich, there's a couple of good recommendations for you. I'll try to remember to put all this stuff in the show notes, folks. All right, let's see. Next is Salif in Utah. He's got a two-part voicemail.
Hi, Bob. My name is Salif in Utah. That rhymes with what if. Sometimes people can't hear that well over the phone. But I wanted to call and leave you a message answering a question that you've asked in the past. I'm looking for some callers now. You've asked, like, you know, what do liberals think about guns, especially liberals who are into guns and are gun owners and pro-Second Amendment. Now, I'm not a liberal, but I've had a lot of liberal friends. My family is liberal. I'm an independent myself. And I had a little bit of insight that I wanted to share with you and your other listeners. So one thing that I do when I meet somebody who is very liberal, but they're and very anti-gun, is that I use an example that speaks to their mindset or their mentality. So one thing I do is that, like, I'll say, I'll have them imagine a situation where their liberal values can be defended by with a gun. So, for example, now regardless of where you stand on gay rights or same-sex marriage or anything like that, that has nothing to do with the example. This is only about guns. So I tell them, imagine, you know, a gay person walking down the street, minding their own business, and somewhere, this could be anywhere in the country, some people come up and they attack him for, you know, obviously maybe they're saying slander, maybe they're making slanderous remarks or whatever. They attack him essentially because he's gay, and they have bats and chains, and they could literally beat him within inches of his life, if not take his life. And I say, well, he should be able to pull out a gun, point it at them, and say, screw off. And if they don't, he's within all of his rights to pull the trigger, because as law-abiding citizens, we don't use violence to you know, get our means met or whatever political goal we want. We only use violence of action when we are under threat of losing our life or of grievous bodily harm. And that applies to all Americans. And so I'm also a professional psychologist in training. I'm in a PhD program right now to become a psychologist, a professor. And And so one thing I always think about is how people associate things. So a lot of liberals, they don't, or a lot of anti-gun people, they don't know a lot anything, if anything, about guns. Mainly, they have a stereotypical view of what gun owners are, and they think that it's only gun ownership is only for the, you know, conservative Republican people that they can't stand. And so they just pull it in with everything else they don't like about right-wing people, and they just, decide to hate guns, too. And so I challenge... Sorry, I guess I'm being a little long-winded. This is Salif from Utah again. I got cut off, and I'll make this quick. But basically, people associate things with things they don't like. They categorize things. So I try to present them with a situation where they can't deny that the person, and it's right in tune with their beliefs, should have a way to protect themselves. And then in terms of, and that breaks down this belief that all gun ownership is only for conservative people. I point out that just like the First Amendment, we all use our pens and paper and our keyboards and our computers to exercise our First Amendment rights to free speech. And so we all, regardless of what political background you have, liberal or conservative or whatever else, have the right to use a gun to protect ourselves, and that's guaranteed by the it's a natural right that is protected by the Second Amendment, and it applies to everybody. It's not just for conservatives and Republicans. They think they're trying to disarm their opponents when really and essentially they're disarming themselves too, because if they pass their gun control, they'll never be able to have a gun to protect themselves either. When I use the situations like that, even at my college, I went to college in Texas, and a young woman who was an Islamic woman, she was walking home from the library at my school while I attended there. She was walking home from the library one night, and she got jumped by a group of people who were, again, making slanderous remarks about her religion, and they didn't. This wasn't a hypothetical example. This is a real story, and she got severely beaten, and she should have been able to have a gun. That campus is a gun-free zone. She should have been able to have a gun on her to defend herself. And so when I point those types of situations out to anti-gun people, especially when I know they're liberal, they have nothing to say. They're like, they're either quiet or they think, yeah, she should have had a gun to defend herself. And then they realize that it's not just, you know, gun ownership isn't just for one political orientation. It's for all Americans to use to protect themselves and their families, you know. And using those examples doesn't mean that you condone homosexuality. That's up to you, and that's a completely separate religious or political or whatever issue you want to call it. And it doesn't mean you condone same-sex marriage. It just means that as law-abiding, mentally sound citizens, we believe in achieving our goals not through bullying and violence, but through peaceful negotiation and discussion, and having guns for when we need to be defended because we're under attack. And so so using examples that go directly to people's values themselves, the values that you know they have, gets them on board. Without them even really realizing it until you get to your end point, and then they realize, oh.
Good voicemail, Salif. So to all of my political left-leaning friends, I hope you listened to that. That was good stuff there. You know, not only do they want to disarm everybody else, but they're also disarming themselves. You know, but I don't think some of them don't care, I don't think. I mean, so Salif, your voicemail is very well thought out and very well put. Thank you for calling it in. I think some anti-gun people, they just don't care. They don't care that they're disarming themselves as well. It's such a politically charged issue. Guns represent the people that they hate. That's what it is. And because it never fails. Whenever you confront a left-leaning person, a politically left-leaning person, whenever you confront them with facts about guns, whenever you confront them with the facts, they really don't have much of a defense. So it tells me that their argument is generally not based in facts. Their argument is generally based in emotion. and they just don't care. You know what happens when people, when people's emotions take over? When people's emotions take over, that's it. I mean, you're often not going to change their mind. You know, I've been in sales for many years. I've been in sales and marketing for 28 years. And I've learned an important truth. People make decisions emotionally and then justify them logically. Okay, I'll say that again. They make decisions emotionally and then justify them logically. Most of the time, that's what happens. And it's the same thing with gun control. They make a decision emotionally and then try to defend it or justify it logically. Oftentimes, they're not very successful justifying it logically because for gun control, there is no logical defense for it. Because logic means they got to bring facts into it. And then when they bring facts into it, well, then that just kind of blows up their plan. Thank you, Salif. Good voicemails there. And folks, that's going to conclude the voicemail portion of the podcast. One more time, if you want to call, that's 210-646-1727. 210-646-1727. Or go to handgunworld.com and just click the Call Me button on my website. Well, folks, thanks for listening to this episode of the Handgun World Podcast, this 228th episode. Ben Branham has submitted a middle-of-the-week podcast. So I would like you to keep checking your feeds, probably on Wednesday night or Thursday morning. Again, depending on what kind of family issues that I'm dealing with, I'll get Ben's middle-of-the-week show. He's got some pretty good information to share on pistol versus rifle for self-defense or both. Good stuff on that. I'm Bob Main. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Remember that the loudest sound that a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting a bang. Shoot straight, shoot safe. Talk to you next time.